All right, get ready to dive deep into some classic philosophy.
Ooh, sounds intense.
It is. We're taking on Plato's Republic this time.
Nice, a real classic.
It is.
Oh,
And
yeah.
you've picked some really fascinating excerpts.
I try.
You did, focusing on justice, education, and the whole idea of a perfect society, an ideal state.
Yeah, Plato's got a lot to say about
He
those.
does. It's amazing how much his ideas still resonate today, even though
Like
it was
50
so long ago.
centuries ago.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
So our challenge, I think, in this deep dive
Yeah.
is to really unearth the core arguments that Plato's making
Oh.
and see if we can't find some unexpected gems
Ooh, I love that.
along the way.
I'm excited to dig in.
Me too.
The Republic itself is structured as a dialogue,
Right.
mainly featuring Socrates, and the way he interacts with all these different people
Yeah.
gives us a really multifaceted view of these big, like, eternal questions.
It seems like Plato was really careful in the way that he portrayed Socrates,
Yes, especially early on.
especially early on,
It
right?
really feels like we're meeting the real Socrates,
Okay.
you know, the one who's known for his sharp wit, and he's challenging everyone, like probing their beliefs.
Right.
And in this case, he's digging into the very definition of justice.
So let's unpack this a little bit.
Okay.
The first character that Socrates encounters is Cephalus.
Yeah.
What's his take on justice?
For Cephalus, he connects justice with honesty, paying your debts, and ultimately, it's tied up with ensuring a peaceful afterlife.
So it sounds like a pretty straightforward view.
Yeah, pretty
You
straightforward view.
know, like do the right thing and good things will follow.
Right, exactly.
But as always, Socrates has to push a little deeper.
He always does.
Yeah.
Classic Socrates.
So he asks this question,
Yeah.
what if someone seems good but they turn out to be bad?
Oh, yeah.
Can simply following rules always lead to just outcomes?
That's tricky.
Right.
That's where those gray areas start to emerge.
Yeah, I bet he's got an example up his sleeve
Oh, he always does.
illustrate this point.
So the example he uses
Yeah.
is returning a weapon to someone who's gone mad.
Whoa.
Right. It
Okay.
technically fits that definition of fulfilling an obligation, right?
Right. You're giving back what you owe.
Exactly. But it could have terrible, terrible consequences. So
Yeah.
suddenly that clear-cut definition of justice
Yeah.
gets a little blurry.
It gets a lot more
It
complex.
does.
Yeah, for sure.
And that complexity is where Polemarchus jumps into the ring.
Okay.
Polemarchus is Cephalus's son,
Okay.
and he sort of inherits the argument,
Okay.
and he shifts the focus a little bit
Okay.
from individual actions to, like, social relationships.
Right.
He proposes that justice actually means helping your friends and
Okay.
harming your enemies.
Interesting. So now we're talking about the dynamics between people,
Exactly.
not just individual actions,
Sure.
but I'm sure
Sorry.
Socrates has some reservations about that as well.
He does. He's always got those questions.
So what does he say?
Well, he raises the question, how can we be absolutely sure who is a true friend and who's a true enemy?
That is a good point.
Right.
Yeah.
And then he goes even further. He asks, can justice ever truly involve intentionally causing harm,
Yeah.
even to those we perceive as enemies?
It's like he's shining a light on all the
That.
gray areas of morality.
Exactly. All those
It's
nuances.
making me uncomfortable
Why?
already.
It's supposed to.
Yeah.
And just when we're really starting to grapple with these, like,
Yeah.
really tough questions, this guy, Thrasymachus, bursts onto the scene.
Here we go.
Yeah,
This
man.
is where it gets really interesting.
This is where it gets really juicy.
Yeah.
Thrasymachus doesn't mess around.
Okay.
He throws out all of those, like, carefully crafted definitions,
Okay.
and he's just like, justice, it's whatever the strongest decide it is.
Wow.
Talk about a power move.
That is a cynical take.
It's cynical, but it's also, like, you gotta admit, it's
Yeah.
a very real view.
Yeah, it's a very real view, right?
It's that might makes right, and it really contrasts with all the other ideas that have been thrown
So
around.
how does he even counter that?
He has to say something to that.
Yeah.
He does.
What's his comeback?
So Socrates is like, okay, hold on.
Yeah.
Even rulers, they can make mistakes,
Right.
and what they think is in their best interest might not actually be beneficial.
Oh.
Right?
So he's separating raw power from
Yes.
wisdom and justice.
Totally.
Right.
And, you know, it makes you think about, like, all the times in history when power has been misused,
Right.
it happens all the time.
Absolutely. And even when Cleitophon jumps in
Oh, yeah.
to try to refine
Yes.
Asymmachus's argument a little bit.
And she tries to, like, Save
him. Yeah.
He's like, well, what about what the ruler thinks is in his interest?
Yeah.
And Socrates is like, nope, not buying it.
Okay, why not?
He insists that the true purpose of leadership, it goes beyond like just personal gain.
Oh, okay.
It's about something bigger.
So we're starting to get a glimpse of like Socrates' vision of the ideal leader.
Exactly.
Someone who actually cares about the well-being of the people they're governing.
Yes.
Right.
That's the seed that's going to be planted, you know, throughout the rest of the Republic.
Right.
This back and forth really sets the stage for his whole exploration of the ideal state.
Okay. And one of the most kind of provocative ideas.
Provocative is a good word.
In that exploration.
Yeah.
Is this idea of the noble lie.
The noble lie. Oh, boy.
It's like he shifts from questioning to proposing something radical.
Totally.
All right. Tell me everything.
Okay. So imagine this.
Yeah.
The citizens are told a story.
Okay.
They're told that they were born from the earth itself.
Okay.
And that each person has a different metal mixed into their soul.
Whoa. Okay.
Right. So you've got gold for the rulers, silver for the auxiliaries, and then like brass or iron for the workers.
Wait, so their whole social structure is built on this origin story?
Yes.
This made-up origin story?
Pretty much. This myth is designed to make everybody accept their roles.
Oh, wow.
And maintain harmony in society.
I can just hear our listeners right now, like, minds blown.
Yeah, this goes against like everything we think about today.
Doubly.
About social mobility and achieving your potential.
Right, exactly, yeah.
So Plato's acknowledging that there needs to be some kind of social stratification.
Mm-hmm.
But he's using this wild tale to justify it.
I mean, it's brilliant, but it's wild.
It's wild.
So what if like a golden child is born to bronze parents?
That's the million-dollar question.
Right.
That's the one that Plato doesn't fully address.
Yeah, of course.
He's very focused on the theoretical framework of his ideal state.
Right.
Not so much the practical implications.
But the practical implications.
I know, right?
Are what make it so fascinating.
This is so interesting.
Yeah, it totally challenges our modern ideas about individual potential and the possibility of change.
Yes, and it forces us to think about, like, the tension between individual freedom and this like idea of social order.
Which is a conversation we're still having today.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing.
It is. It's like Plato saying, okay, here's my ideal society, but can you handle it?
Can you handle the implications?
Exactly.
Right.
And this is just the beginning.
Oh, no.
We haven't even gotten to his ideas about education.
Oh, God.
Censorship, the individual soul.
All right, well, I am definitely ready to keep going.
Okay, let's do it.
So when we come back, we'll explore how this noble lie plays out in Plato's vision for education.
It's going to be a wild ride.
I'm so ready.
Buckle up.
Okay, welcome back to the deep dive.
We're back.
I'm still reeling from that noble lie.
Oh, yeah.
It's just such a bold concept, such a bold idea.
It really is.
And I'm really excited to see how it connects to Plato's views on education.
Oh, well, get ready for another twist.
Okay.
Because, you know, we have this society, right, that's divided into these classes based on metals.
Right.
Everybody believes their role is basically predetermined.
Yeah.
And so Plato outlines this really rigorous education system, especially for the guardians, right? The gold class.
Future rulers.
The future leaders.
Yeah, it makes sense.
You got to prepare them.
A solid foundation if you're going to lead an entire society.
Exactly. So how does Plato's education system differ from what we experience today? Well, it's radically different.
Okay.
He divides education into two main branches. Like, he calls it music and gymnastics.
Music and gymnastics.
And when he says music,
he's
not just talking about melodies and stuff. He's talking about, like, literature, poetry, all forms of artistic expression.
So it's more like a broader, like, cultural education?
It's like cultural education, yeah. It's all encompassing.
Interesting. Okay, so why so much emphasis on music, then?
Well, he believed...
For these future rulers.
Yeah, Plato believed that art has a profound impact on the soul.
Okay.
Especially on young minds.
Mm-hmm.
He thought that, like, exposure to certain types of art could cultivate virtue.
Okay.
While others could actually corrupt the soul.
Oh, so is he advocating for, like, censorship then?
He is.
Controlling what stories and poems and music
these
future leaders are exposed to?
He's envisioning this like really carefully curated artistic environment.
Okay.
And it's all about promoting courage, temperance, justice, you know.
Yeah.
It circles back to that noble lie.
Right.
Shaping individuals to fit those specific roles.
It's like he's building a society from the ground up.
From the ground up.
And controlling every single element.
Yeah, it's very, very controlled.
To achieve this vision.
Very deliberate.
Of like a perfect state.
Yes.
But honestly, it sounds a bit stifling, doesn't it?
I mean, it definitely raises some questions.
It does.
Like about individual freedom and expression.
Yeah.
And it gets even more intense when you look at the specifics of what he considered harmful.
Yeah, like what did he want to censor?
So he targeted some of the most famous myths and epics of his time.
What? Really?
Like he was going after Homer and Hesiod.
Like those are classics.
I know.
What could possibly be wrong with Homer?
Well, for Plato, the problem was that the gods in these stories, they often behaved badly.
Okay, so they weren't
like
perfect models of morality.
No, not at all. They lie.
Yeah.
They cheat. They're driven by jealousy. They indulge in all sorts of like bad behavior.
Yeah, and if you're trying to raise like guardians who are supposed to be
paragons of virtue.
Yeah, like I can see how that sends the wrong message.
Exactly.
So it wasn't just about censorship though, right? It was about replacing those stories with new ones.
Yeah, he wanted stories that depicted gods and heroes as models of justice and wisdom.
Right.
Not beings who just like gave in to all of their desires.
Right.
He wanted to promote virtue.
So a very kind of strict view of how art should function in society.
It's all about like serving a very specific purpose.
Right.
Which is the cultivation of virtue and the stability of the stake.
And that principle extended beyond just stories, right?
Right. It went beyond stories.
Yeah.
He also criticized certain styles of music and poetry.
Like what?
Anything that he thought might stir up like excessive emotions or encourage weakness.
So nothing too like wild and crazy.
No, nothing too exciting.
Yeah, okay.
Keep it calm.
Yeah.
Keep it controlled.
Very controlled. Wow.
And this also applied to acting, by the way.
Okay. How so?
So Plato argued that guardians shouldn't imitate anything that was like base or ignoble.
Oh, okay.
They can only embody the good.
Wow. Talk about limited range for an actor.
All right.
Can't play any villains.
No villains allowed.
Or flawed characters.
Nope. Got to be perfect.
It's like one man, one job.
One man, one job. Exactly.
Stick to your role. That's it.
Okay. So I can see how
this
kind of like controlled environment could lead to like a more harmonious society.
Potentially.
Right. But at what cost?
Yeah. That's the question, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, on the one hand, you could argue that this type of censorship might protect people from harmful ideas.
Right. But it also feels like it would stifle creativity.
It could. It could definitely stifle.
And individual expression.
Yeah. And, you know, force everybody to conform
right.
to this, like, pre-approved mold.
So is that truly an ideal society?
That's the big question.
Even if it's peaceful and orderly.
Even if it's, like, perfectly harmonious on the surface.
Yeah.
Is it truly ideal if you're like suppressing?
Yeah, it's a tricky dilemma. It is. It's like it highlights those challenges, right?
Mm.
Of creating a utopia, even a philosophical one.
Right.
There are always going to be those trade-offs.
And I think Plato recognized that, right?
Yeah, I think he did.
Like the Republic is more about.
It's about getting us to think.
Yeah.
To think deeply about these questions.
Yeah, more so than giving us these clear-cut answers.
There are no easy answers here.
Yeah, for sure. So where does he take us next?
Well, he moves from that macro level, like the state,
right.
to the micro level, the individual.
Okay.
He wants to connect justice in society to justice within the individual soul.
Oh, this is what I've been waiting for.
I know, right?
I love that connection between like.
Yeah, it's so fascinating.
Like the outer world,
yeah.
the inner world.
Absolutely.
Okay, so how does he explain that connection?
Well, this is where he introduces his famous theory of the tripartite soul.
Tripartite, meaning
three parts.
Okay, I'm all ears.
All right, so he argues that the soul has three distinct elements.
Okay.
Reason, spirit, and desire.
I can't help but notice that's very similar.
Yeah, apparently.
To the three classes in the ideal state.
It does. It's no coincidence.
Yeah.
Plato draws a direct analogy between the two.
Okay.
He believes that justice within the individual mirrors justice within the state.
So how do those three parts interact?
Whoa.
Is it just like a constant battle for control?
He uses this brilliant analogy. He talks about a charioteer guiding two horses.
Okay.
So reason is the charioteer.
Okay.
And it's trying to control these two powerful steeds.
Okay.
One is a noble horse,
okay,
which represents spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is like wild and unruly. That's desire.
Oh, I love that.
I know, right?
That's such a vivid image.
It's such a good image.
Yeah.
It really captures those like inner struggles.
Mm-hmm. Those inner struggles we all experience.
We all experience it.
Yeah.
Push and pull.
So when those three parts work in harmony, that's when we achieve this.
That's when you've got
individual justice.
Individual justice. You got it.
Each part doing what it's meant to do.
Exactly. Yeah. Reason is guiding.
Mm-hmm.
Spirit is providing like the courage, the motivation.
Yeah.
Desire is taking care of those like basic needs.
What happens when there's conflict?
Yeah, when one part overwhelms the others.
That's when you've got injustice.
Okay.
Both within the individual and mm-hmm. society as a whole.
So like if desire or spirit overpowers reason.
Yeah, if the horses run away with the chariot.
That's when we make bad choices.
Bad choices, harmful actions.
It's like that runaway chariot, right?
Yeah.
It's chaos and destruction in its wake.
Exactly.
So it sounds like all of this education, the censorship, all of this is all aimed at cultivating that.
It's about cultivating that inner balance,
yeah,
that inner justice.
Right. And I think that's part of like his grand vision.
It is. It's all connected.
It's his grand vision.
It's like this society where both the individuals and the state itself.
Yeah. Everybody's in alignment.
We're in alignment with the good.
With the good.
This is blowing my mind.
I know. It's a lot to take in.
That's a lot.
Plato is like weaving together philosophy, psychology, political theory.
Yeah.
It's all one big tapestry.
It really is. And he doesn't just rely on these abstract concepts, right?
He uses stories.
Yeah. Like, remember that story we mentioned earlier about Leontius?
Oh, Leontius.
Which it's not exactly like light dinner conversation.
No, not really.
But it really drives home.
It illustrates
this point about the the inner struggle.
Yeah, the internal struggle.
Remind me what happens in that story.
Okay, so Leontius is walking along outside the city walls.
Okay.
And he comes across a group of dead bodies.
Not a very pleasant sight.
Not a pleasant sight at all.
No.
But it's his reaction that's important. He feels this like desire to look at the bodies.
Okay.
But also this really strong aversion.
Okay. So he's like torn between.
He's torn.
Curiosity and disgust.
Curiosity and disgust, like battling it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so he initially like turns away.
Okay.
But then he forces himself to look.
Oh.
It's almost like one part of his soul is like wrestling with the other.
Yeah. It's like a perfect illustration of the.
It is. It's a perfect illustration.
Struggle between.
Reason, spirit, and desire.
You got it.
Yeah. And for Plato, it's like evidence
that
these are distinct forces
within
us.
Separate forces. Yeah.
It's so interesting how he adds these like human elements.
He uses those stories.
To his philosophical theory.
To bring them to life.
We see how they actually like.
It makes it real.
Play out in everyday life.
It does.
Yeah. I wonder what Leontius's charioteer was doing.
I know, right?
During that encounter.
Seems like that wild horse of desire.
Yeah.
Took over for a minute. For a minute. Yeah. Oh, man.
Got the reins.
So, okay. We've covered so much.
We have.
We've gone from defining justice to this like tripartite soul.
Yes.
But there's one big piece of the puzzle that we haven't talked about yet.
The philosopher king.
Okay, here we go.
This is the big one.
And that's where we're headed next.
Dead ready.
All right, I am ready.
It's Plato's most radical idea.
All right, welcome back to the deep dive. I have to admit, I'm a little nervous to tackle this next concept.
Oh, why is that?
Well, we've talked about the noble lie, this carefully crafted society.
Yeah.
We've explored the tripartite soul.
Right.
But now we're facing Plato's most radical idea yet.
Okay, hit me with it.
The philosopher king.
The philosopher king. Oh, boy.
Plato's not just calling for a wise and kind ruler.
Right.
He's arguing for something way more specific.
Okay, what is it?
A ruler who is a philosopher.
A ruler who is a philosopher.
Okay. I think our listener might be thinking.
Yeah, I can see it.
What's so special about philosophers?
Right. They don't exactly have a reputation for like being the most practical leader.
Right. Exactly.
So where does this idea come from?
Yeah.
Well, I think we have to go back to
one
of Plato's most famous images, the allegory of the cave.
Right. Where those who escape the shadows see the light of true knowledge.
Exactly. They see the world as it truly is.
But how does that make them fit to rule?
Well, for Plato, true knowledge isn't just about facts and figures.
Okay.
It's about understanding those, like, fundamental principles of justice, goodness, and beauty.
Okay.
Like, those are the very qualities that an ideal ruler should embody.
But wouldn't most people prefer a leader who understands?
Yeah, someone who gets it.
Their everyday concerns, someone they can relate to.
Yeah, someone who's been there.
Philosophers are often seen as, you know, kind of out of touch with reality.
Head in the clouds.
Head in the clouds.
Yeah.
Stuck in their head.
Oh, Plato knew people would say that.
Oh, really?
He was ahead of his time.
So what's his response to that?
So he's like, okay, true philosophers.
Yeah.
They aren't just thinkers. They also have courage.
Okay.
They have temperance and a deep love of truth.
Okay.
These are the traits that make a just and effective leader.
So it's not just about being book smart.
No.
It's about having, like...
It's about having the whole package.
Yeah, like the moral compass and the practical skills to lead.
Exactly.
But how realistic is it to find someone?
Yeah, that's the question, right?
Who embodies all of those qualities?
It's a tall order.
Are philosopher kings just a fantasy?
Well, so Plato admits that they're rare.
Okay.
But he believes that they can be cultivated.
Okay.
Through the right kind of education and training.
Right, like that rigorous system.
Exactly. Remember all that stuff we talked about?
With the guardians?
With the guardians?
Yeah.
It's all about nurturing those potential philosopher kings.
So it's a long shot, but not impossible.
It's a long shot, but it's worth striving for.
Okay, but even if you do find this, like, rare individual, this philosopher king,
yeah,
would people even accept them as a leader?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Wouldn't they prefer someone who...
More relatable.
Seems a little bit more down to earth.
I think that's where the allegory of the cave comes back in.
Okay.
Imagine trying to explain true reality.
Yeah.
To someone who's never left the cave, who's only ever seen shadows.
Right, they wouldn't even understand.
It'd be like trying to describe colors to someone who's been blind since birth.
Yeah, it's like, how do you even begin to have that conversation?
Exactly. So the philosopher king might face resistance, ridicule, who knows?
Yeah, that's a tough job.
Yeah.
But Plato believes.
He believes it's their duty.
It's their duty to lead people towards a better understanding.
Even if it's hard.
Even if it's a difficult path.
Yeah.
It makes you think about the challenges any leader faces when they're trying to make real change.
Real lasting change. It's not easy.
Yeah, especially when people
get comfortable.
Cling to those. Yeah.
They like their shadows.
Familiar illusions. It's easier.
It's comfortable.
Yeah, it's comfortable.
And, you know, that brings us to another fascinating aspect of Plato's thought.
Yeah.
His analysis of different types of regimes.
All right.
And how they inevitably decline.
Okay, let's dive into that a little bit.
Okay.
So we have the ideal state ruled by the philosopher king.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of those other forms of government?
Okay, so he outlines five regimes in total.
Okay.
It starts with aristocracy.
Okay.
Which represents his ideal state.
Mm-hmm.
Then comes timocracy, which is ruled by those who prize honor and military glory.
Okay.
Then oligarchy, where the wealthy few hold all the power.
Okay.
Then we have democracy, ruled by the majority.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, tyranny.
Oh, boy.
The most corrupt regime of all.
It sounds like a real downward spiral.
It kind of is. It's like each form decays into the next.
So what causes this decline?
So Plato thinks it's a combination of factors.
Okay.
The shift from aristocracy to timocracy starts when, like, the love of honor and war leads to a shift in values.
Okay.
People start to prioritize wealth and personal gain.
Yeah, over virtue.
Over virtue, over the common good.
It's interesting that he sees, like, the seeds of corruption being sown, even in a society that begins with noble ideals.
It's like that slippery slope, you know?
Right.
One thing leads to another.
And then that decline intensifies.
Yeah, totally.
As society transitions to oligarchy.
Oligarchy gets really bad.
So what happens there?
Wealth inequality grows.
Okay.
Social unrest increases.
Yeah.
And this whole class of what he calls drones emerges.
Drones.
Drones. They're the people who just consume without contributing.
Oh, okay.
They're just sort of like leeches on society.
That sounds eerily familiar.
It does, doesn't it?
It does.
It's like he's describing, you know, our world in some ways.
And then his analysis of democracy. I'm a little nervous about this one.
I know. It's a little controversial.
Yeah, but is he saying democracy is inherently flawed?
I don't think he's condemning it outright.
Okay.
But he's highlighting, like, its potential weaknesses.
Okay.
He sees it as a system that, like, prioritizes freedom above all else.
Okay.
Which can lead to instability.
Yeah.
And it can make people susceptible to manipulation.
That's a really good point.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's warning us about like valuing individual freedom to the point where it actually undermines social order and justice.
So it's about finding that balance.
It's all about that.
Between individual liberty.
Yeah.
And the common good.
Exactly.
And when that balance is lost.
That's when things fall apart.
That's when we slip into tyranny.
Yeah.
Where one ruler.
A single ruler.
Seizes power.
Yeah, they take over.
And just exploits everyone.
For their own personal gain.
It's a pretty sobering thought.
It is. It makes you wonder, is there any hope?
Right.
Like, can we break free from this cycle?
And that's where.
That's where Plato introduces.
He introduces this final myth.
The myth of Ur.
The myth of Ur.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me about this myth.
Okay, so it's about this soldier.
Yeah.
Who dies in battle, but then he's miraculously revived.
Oh, wow.
And he comes back.
Okay.
To tell this crazy story about the afterlife.
Okay.
Where souls are judged.
Okay.
And they're given the opportunity to choose their next lives.
So it's like reincarnation.
Yeah, it's like reincarnation with a twist.
But the souls actually have a say.
They have a choice.
In their destinies.
That's the key.
Okay.
And that's where Plato emphasizes, like, the importance of choosing wisely.
Okay.
You had to choose based on virtue.
So even though there's a cycle of decline
yeah.
in these earthly regimes.
It's inevitable.
There's still hope for individual souls.
Yes.
To progress towards the good.
Exactly. That's the hope.
Wow.
And it all comes back to, like, what we were talking about before.
Right.
With education and self-knowledge.
By understanding true justice,
yeah.
we can make choices that lead us to a better life.
Absolutely.
Both now and in the future.
That's the goal.
It's a powerful message.
It is.
I feel like we've been on this incredible journey.
We have.
We went from defining justice mm-hmm. to envisioning the ideal state.
Yeah.
And even got a glimpse of the afterlife.
We went deep.
What a journey through Plato's Republic.
That's an amazing work.
What's fascinating to me is how, like, these ideas
yeah.
written thousands of years ago.
Thousands of years ago.
Still resonate with us.
They're still relevant.
Social mobility, censorship, the role of education.
We're still talking about these things.
We're still talking about all these things.
It's incredible.
It makes you think, are we moving towards a more just and harmonious society?
Or are we headed down that path of decline?
Ooh, that's a good question for our listener to ponder.
And maybe ask yourself, if you had the chance to choose your next life,
yeah,
what kind of life would you aim for?
That's an amazing, thought-provoking way. It's something to think about.
To wrap up this deep dive.
Yeah.
Until next time, keep exploring.
Keep questioning.
Keep questioning and keep diving deep.
Deep dive.
Into the world of ideas.